VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this week, guess what? I am excited. I'm always excited, but this week I'm especially excited because we actually have three live bodies in the room in addition to myself. That's right. We have three guests. We have Tony Cascarino, James Scowcroft, fresh off a trip to Paris, I believe.
No, later on this afternoon.
Thumbs up doesn't really work.
It's Paris or Anfield, and Paris just won.
Can't blame you. And of course, our favorite Parisian, second favorite Parisian, sorry.
Who's the first one?
Nicolas Anelka.
Oh, okay.
It's Julian Lawrence. And it gets even better because later in the program, we will be joined by Henry Winter, the man, the myth, the legend, fresh off his trip to Barcelona to talk to Ivan Rakitic, or maybe it was Ivan Rakitic who wanted to speak to him. Later on, we'll be going through Arsenal and Swansea, talking about a bit about youth development, which James Scowcroft knows a thing or two about, because he used to be young, and then he developed. And we'll be running through the rest of the Premier League.
Not as much as you, though.
He's getting his shots in early this week. Wonderful. Before we move on with the show, I need to tell you that I'm pretty excited because we have a sponsor now. It's FanDuel, fanduel.co.uk. It's what allows us to continue bringing you the Game Podcast for free. Now, some of you may know FanDuel. It's a daily fantasy. The UK version, or our sponsors, it's a bit different than the US one. So you may want to listen up on this. But basically, daily fantasy sports, you can play for free or you can put money in. If you put money in, you can win money. You have £100 million to spend. You pick your team. Thus far, it sounds like standard fantasy. But what's different about this and what I like about this is that it's not just, you don't just get points for goals, assists, clean sheets. They have a whole formula that's based on Opta stats that awards points. So it's hopefully a little bit more reflective of a player's true performance. And actually, if you're a bit wonkish like myself, you can actually go online and you can find out exactly what that formula is and how they award points. And if you sign up with a promo code THEGAME at fanduel.co.uk, they will return your entry fee as a free credit up to £10 if you don't win cash in your first contest. Now, my producer, Dave McGuire, and myself, we're going to be entering next week, and we're quite excited. You can go and compete against us. You just need to go to fanduel.co.uk and enter the promo code THEGAME. Let's go to the Etihad. Cass, City and Everton. Now, I was curious about how they were going to react. Obviously, after the Tottenham defeat in the back of their minds, they had they have, of course, this huge game coming up midweek against Barcelona. What I did not expect was that, hey, look, he goes back three. Mm. He was always pulling something out of the hat, that guy. Were you surprised by that?
Well, I was surprised he did it so quickly. I think what he learned against Celtic and Tottenham, that in the full-back positions, they're struggling. If you can get City out wide and there's space, you can utilise it to get an advantage in a game. And I think he clearly thinks his fullbacks are not as good as he would probably like. He's had some fantastic ones, hasn't he?
But he doesn't now. But Julian, the thing is, he goes back three. It's not like his fullbacks aren't getting on the pitch. Clichy is still there. You still need somebody. So,
And Clichy gets beaten 1-1 by Lukaku on the goal. So I'm not sure. It's something he did before at Barcelona. More by Munich.
In more a covert way, because it was Busquets or whoever dropping into the back three, but you had guys pushing on. But here you don't have the guys pushing on.
But by Munich, you saw him doing exactly the same at Bayern Munich. So maybe his own evolution of the way he wants to play. I thought it was interesting, and I think it will work, but maybe with three proper centre backs. When Kompany is back, and when you don't have Clichy there, because Clichy.
Yeah, so he had two proper centre-backs before, didn't he? He had Puyol and Piqué, who you could fit in another one alongside them because they are natural defenders, certainly Poirier.
Yeah, it's a really, really bad comparison. The reason being...
Is it? Oh, I thought it was quite a good one.
I think it's a terrible comparison because remember, he also had Mascherano at the back, who very good, but not a natural center half. Not a traditional one either.
He did very well there.
You know, he did, no, but the point is he does well with guys who aren't natural center backs. Because at Bayern, of course, he played David Alaba there. He played freaking Josh Kimmich there, although Kimmich apparently can play anywhere. You know, the 6 foot, 20-year-old attacking midfielder, and you say, hey, go play center half. I mean, when we think about it, it's kind of crazy. In fact,
do you think he's underestimated it a little bit, the strength of the Premier League? I'm sure at Barcelona, in Bayern, but you get players like Lukaku, so if you're weak at the back, like I say, took advantage, and that's...
Hey, it's possible. I think, though...
I don't think you can take chances. Where whoever you are in the Premier League, I think your back three, back four has to be strong every single week.
Mm. Well, it's funny, actually. While we're on Pep, he also gave this... I tweeted it out, I don't know where the hell he gave this, but it was, tweeted out, 3 o'clock in the morning last night, so I don't expect anybody to have seen it. But he said that... People talk about the intensity of the Premier League.
It's the post-match press conference.
Yeah, he said the intensity in the Premier League is no different than it is in Germany, Spain, or Italy. Now, I have my own views on this. You played in France, but that was a few years ago. It does kind of fly into the face of what we're constantly told by Sky and BT Sport about, there's nothing like the crash bang wall. No. Is it true? Is it changing? Is there really not that much difference, especially if you're in a top side, because the other guys just generally all kind of sit back and wait for you to attack? I mean, is it really that intense, Cass? Well, is it that different?
It was a different era, but I can put my hat on from the French corner because I found it incredibly intense playing certain games, and it was very demanding. And yes, teams did play with certain types of players. I think we exaggerate it, but the exaggeration of it happens at every club where there's, every team has a certain way of playing. I think there's an element to it in England, but I wouldn't say a Bournemouth now fit into that mould. I think they play a very fast forward thinking game with very nippy, quick players. Not really. He's tried Glenn Murray at centre forward. He's had a couple of them.
Talk about Bournemouth.
No, I'm talking about teams, smaller teams.
No, but what I'm saying is the intensity of the matches. I don't know. I need to ask the guy who asked the question, what Pep meant. But
I don't know.
What was interesting is that Samir Nasri, on the same day as Pep on Saturday, came after Sevilla won and he scored a goal, and he said, I like it here in Spain because it's not the same intensity as in England. He said in England it's constantly one, box to box. The two teams go straight forward straight away. He said here in Spain, it's not as intense. It's not
it's
as
also
pacey.
Special.
For Nasri to say, you would believe him that he doesn't feel the same intensity.
No,
because I need to address this Nasri point. It's a weird thing to say, especially, though, given the team that he plays on and the manager that he plays for, because I know Jorge Sampaoli is probably more intense than
but I guess when you play
any manager
Leganes, which was the game.
But yeah, no, the other team, yeah, they're all standing around and waiting. Yeah.
I just love the way Pep said it as well, and because in his answer, if people haven't seen it, and if you haven't, go and check Gab's timeline on Twitter, but it's the way he said, oh, come on, guys, you have to stop about that intensity thing in England, because, believe me, it's the same in Spain and in Germany, and it was just...
He said Italy, too, which was awesome.
Italy as well.
Can I just add, the one team we'd have said, if we'd have sat here from last season and said lacked intensity, we'd have probably gone Man City, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Because they did lack intensity. So he certainly had it his own club, but that's not a case across the board. I think there are certain teams. I think Chelsea lacked intensity last year.
The whole point is that there's a variety. And I don't,
yeah, there
is
a
variety.
Whole,
this is so intense, nothing can match it. You can talk about excitement, you can talk about packages, you can talk about size of clubs, you can talk about whatever you want, but... Yeah, maybe he does have a point. I think this is a subject to return to. Scoey, yes. Intensity or not, this was a match that, obviously, you have the two missed penalties and everything. You've got the chances. You have some outrageous saves from Stecklenburg. We can go back and we can say, they dropped 2 points. Maybe it's a hangover, but they could have won this 5-1, right?
Exactly. If you look at both the penalties, they're poor penalties as well. But I think Pep's one of those. It's 2 points dropped, isn't it? And he'll be kicking himself. After the game, I thought Man City did okay.
But you say he's going to be kicking himself. He said after the game that he's not kicking himself because he said we played really, really well. It's just sheer bad luck.
He's just contradicted himself, isn't he? Every player, every manager, if you played really well and you haven't won the game, you'll be slightly disappointed, won't you? It's 2 points that they dropped.
I really enjoyed their performance. I thought it was sensational at times, City.
Did you think... Were you a bit surprised that Koeman sat off them a bit? I sort of thought maybe he'll go and try to play to approach it, because mm-hmm. he's done it before. He's used a high press before, and it's Southampton. Maybe he's got different players. Maybe you don't really want
to
be doing that.
I think it's
that.
A way to play against them.
No, well,
it worked out okay for Tottenham, right?
Yeah. See, it's a strange one, because Man United, one thing that surprised me in the derby when they played City is that United come second best in the physical matchup when they try to fight them for every ball. City were very comfortable. And so it's a very tricky one, because Tottenham the week, weeks after, do it and get away with it. But I thought the fullbacks with Tottenham were way more important. I thought the fullbacks for Spurs were brilliant on the day as well.
It's different scenarios, yeah. Isn't it? If you go to the Etihad, I personally would drop off, park the bus, call it whatever you want, and say, right, come on to us and we'll exploit the space that you've
left
behind. And
they've got Balassi's.
If you're at home and you're Tottenham and you're chatting, it's a different scenario.
Yeah,
and
I'd go along with that.
Julian's probably also a question of the players you have. If I go and decide to press you with Lamela and Son and guys and Dele Alli, guys who are smart and super athletic, great. If I try to do it with, no disrespect, Yannick Bolasie and Gerard Deulofeu, who are outstanding footballers, but they're not exactly athletic, or Bolasie is athletic, obviously, but they're not that kind of disciplined, coordinated press type people, it's going to blow up in your face.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like Scott said, it's easier to do at home than away from home. It's easier probably to do at Wahar Lane, where the pitch is smaller than at the Etihad, where they'll have most. But even at Spurs, they kept playing from the back, even when they knew they were going to be under pressure, even when the whole Spurs team was in the faces, they're still playing, and I think that's great. I think where Pep was going to be disappointed, it's not maybe a bit of the result and everything, but it's the way they conceded that goal. Just to go back on that, how is it that Clichy is one-on-one with Lukaku, where it's still 0-0 at the time? It's the same issue he had at Bayern Munich, but too many players forward. They have to think better when they're attacking. You just can't stay so exposed and so open, to the point that Lukaku is one-on-one with Gael Clichy at home, in a game that is still 0-0.
See, if you want
to where they have to improve even more.
Yeah, if he was up against a one-on-one, say for argument's sake, a centre-forward like me, a Ricky Lambert, a John Artson, who weren't going to burst past you if the ball was played in a channel. Well, Lukaku wants to be in that situation. So that's why I think Pep gets it wrong sometimes, not understanding the opposition have a guy that will expose you if you're left on a one-on-one.
And Balassi as well.
I'm going to play devil's advocate or Pep's advocate here for a second. I take your point that, if I have Gareth McCauley back there out in the open field, but isn't Clichy's whole shtick that he's super quick? And I realise he's not a central defender.
He's not going to be strong. Leaving one-on-one. One mistake, it could be a physical, it could be speed.
Yeah, you obviously don't want to leave anybody one-on-one, but I'm saying is you'd rather have Clichy one-on-one, perhaps in the open field, than maybe Otamendi.
It may be a guy of his same height as him, and fit, but physical. If Lukaku's on one-on-one and shoulder to shoulder, he's running.
Well, that's the thing with Lukaku.
Him.
He can run past you or he can run you over.
Yeah.
So, there's not much you can do.
Is Clichy the ideal 1v1 person with him? I don't think so.
No.
But he would be ideal if it was...
His pace.
Okay, that's two now. but it would be... But certainly, if it were Deulofeu, you'd rather have Clichy against him, wouldn't you, than Otamendi in the open field?
Yeah.
So maybe that was part of his thinking.
I think Pep's got to realise how to stop the counter-attack. I think it's all possession when we're going forward, but I think out of possession, probably they've got to improve a little bit, Man City.
I want to talk Everton for a minute, because I didn't quite know what to expect of them this year. Obviously, we saw what Koeman did. I thought he had a really strong club behind him and a strong setup at Southampton. At Everton, with a new owner coming in, they're kind of rebuilding, but I think he's done really well. Mm. And if I have one thing is... That guy, Mason Holgate, why don't we see him? Are we going to see him again? Am I the only one who liked this guy? All right, forget I mentioned Mason Holgate. I saw him play a couple times out of the year. I thought he was good. I'm sorry.
He's got time to come back.
What's realistic? Because I think this is a really, really good team in terms of the players. There's a lot of quality there.
I remember mentioning them with Corey in a podcast a few weeks ago, maybe, and we said, let's see when they face... proper opposition. Let's see when they face proper team, really strong teams. Let's see what they're made of, especially away from home. And yet they were a bit lucky on Saturday. You can't, they can play that game another 9 times and they will lose nine times. Mm. But they still got a point, in fairness. Mm. It would be great for their confidence. They don't play in Europe, don't forget, which is a huge advantage as we saw last season. And I think the recruitment in the summer was just spot on, from Ashley Williams
to Bolasie. Are they relying on a little bit like Tottenham did with Harry Kane and Ericsson, Dele, are they relying on three or four individuals if Lukaku got injured?
No, I never felt they could get close to the Champions League with Tim Howard in goal. And then I didn't think they were fit as a team last year. And I know Koeman touched on it at the start of the season. But I watched Ireland play before the Euros, and definitely Seamus Coleman weren't as fit as he should have been, nor was McCarthy, James McCarthy, nowhere near as fit as he should be. So you were having quite a number of the positions in their back line. I looked at them and I thought it was a club that smelt like it was in a bit of a comfort zone last year. Nearly all their teams signed new contracts last year. Nearly all their players.
Right.
And they had, I thought, a really average season. I saw them at Norwich last year. They blew Norwich away for 45 minutes. Well, it was 1-0. Second half, you would have thought they'd change kits because Norwich blew Everton away. And they ended up 1-1. It's a completely different ethos in the group. I think his mentality of what we just spoke about Barca, for Koeman, I think he's brought that to Everton of the way players have to think about their fitness first and foremost.
Obviously, I didn't think Martin Stecklenburg was going to be. I just don't think he's very good. But he was. He's been good.
He's not.
And he was good on this day. But
I was in Amsterdam for a Netherlands France on Monday last week, where he was dreadful and made a big mistake on a good shot from Paul Pogba, but he should have saved it easily. And then on Saturday he has the game of his life. So
I want to take a quick look about the Barcelona game, so we can throw forward. So obviously they have Barcelona coming up. Midweek, it's maybe, actually, let's ask our Champions League expert here. Julian Lawrence, for those who don't know, there's this great show on BT Sport with the excellent James Horncastle, the excellent Howard Webb, and some weird German guy, and James Richardson, too, who's also very good.
Yeah.
This is maybe the second truly box office Champions League game that we've had this year after Bayern and Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
What's your sense? Do you think, I mean, Pep's already, people are going to make a big deal, Pep goes back to Barcelona, but he's been back.
Yeah.
Is the subtext sort of Pep and Luis Enrique trying to outwit each other?
I like that. And
what is the subtext?
The subtext is, I think, Pep and Luis against each other. I think the fact that Barcelona played three at the back at the weekend, which was very interesting, and Luis Enrique saying, we might do it again in midweek, Pep playing three at the back.
Sergio Roberto's definitely out?
I don't know. I think it might be just today on Monday morning. It might be too early. But if they go three at the back each, which maybe Pep played three at the back against Everton to prepare for the Barcelona game. That would be very interesting. I think Messi coming back, at the right time, he came on at the weekend, scored on his third touch. Kevin De Bruyne coming back as well for City. So everybody will be there. Well, pretty much everybody will be there. It's going to be fascinating. And I just can't wait. I don't think Pep is going to lose there. I don't think City are going to lose. I know everybody sees Barca winning and everything. I think Pep is going to come up with a plan, whether that's three at the back, whether whatever. But like you said, he always has something in his heart. And
same,
I think
the same plan that he came up with when he was Bayern manager.
It's a different team. It's a different season.
Annihilated.
You can't compare.
No, it's. I thought that night that he got it so wrong and realised after 20 minutes he had to change it around.
But maybe that's the reason why he's not going to get it wrong this time.
He spoke in midweek, or before the game Saturday, that how do you handle the Suarez, Messi and Neymar? How do you handle? You can't do an individual man-to-man marking job on them. I just see that being the ultimate difference in the game.
Arsenal and Swansea, Theo Walcott, two goals, he hit the woodwork twice. I picked a team of the week for ESPN. I'm one of several people on the jury, which includes European Cup winners and England legends like Paul Mariner. We all had Theo Walcott in our team of the week. And then I kind of watched the extended highlights and I sort of thought to myself, you know what? If you're Wenger, you could easily like sit him down and point out like 50 things he could have done better in the game. Is this just, Cass, is this like a peculiar Theo Walcott thing that even when he's good, all these big flaws come up?
Well, there's a lot of anti-Theo Walcott in football. I certainly
did you call
that.
Him Theo Walcott?
For Theo Walcott.
Okay, sorry.
But anyway, there's a lot of people watching. It quite surprises me that Theo gets stick on every level. And he's always compared to Thierry Henry. Well, yeah, he's playing for Arsenal. If you look at his goal ratio, and I looked at it this morning because I thought he's got quite a good one, I think, in my head. And look, he's played 155 times in the league, scored 60 goals. He's played 89 as a sub. I think that's pretty decent. He had a terrible ACL injury that I thought he was playing the best football of his career when he did it and never came back the same quite clearly for a good number of months. He's FA Cup, he scored 7 in 16, League Cup 9 in 15, and he's got 16 other goals in 37 games.
By the way, Cass has memorised all these figures.
No,
he's most
not,
definitely
I'm
not looking at his phone.
He's like Rain Man.
Wonderful 4G reception.
No. I'm saying this all like this while I'm reading it off is because when I was coming down the train this morning, I'm thinking, do you know what? I think Theo's got less than a 1 in 3 goal ratio, which isn't bad for a guy that's not a centre-forward. I think he can play centre-forward. I think he's also very unlucky that he plays a centre-forward's role where he's never had a partner. Now, it's hard to score goals on your own. It's easier with a partner. But Wenger has always played him as a right-sided or down the middle. I think he's getting criticised, right, even when he could have got
five. But I don't think Wenger's going to start playing 4-4-2 to suit Theo Walcott.
Okay, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if you look at him as an individual, you can actually say that his goal ratio, it does determine that he could play centre-forward.
So this is the case for Theo Walcott.
Is it consistency that's his biggest problem? You know, I don't think anyone would die. He's got ability, he's got pace.
Yes, I understand,
James. He's versatile.
James.
You know, at the moment he's on a reasonable run, but then he just goes missing for... not a couple of games, a few months.
I would have said when he did his ACL, he was playing frighteningly good football. And he didn't go missing.
He scored 14 goals this season.
Yeah, and he was frightening in that period. I think everybody was played against him would have known that Theo was absolutely on his game. He came back and he struggled. With that, criticism if he had any, he was in and out of the team. England has never really worked for him in the last couple of years. I think Theo is
and
a very
really
player.
Taken a big game by the scruff of the neck. It's okay, Swansea at home, but has he really gone to? And I'm sure people might prove me wrong.
I'm sure we could all give an example. Whether I said, well, if you consider it a big
Man
game
City.
Of Croatia.
So the United game last season, the Manchester United game, was the really low of the lowest of Theo Walcott last season. And I think after that, he realised that he had to, you know, kick himself in the butt.
He's a confidence player. For someone who's been around so long as well.
He's 27. You know, Wenger always says that a striker is peak, and, you know, you two probably know, it will be between 28 and 32. Because as a striker, maybe you mature a bit later. And for Theo Walcott, maturity...
Yeah, I wouldn't say that.
Those days are gone,
time,
mate.
Yeah, I don't know, but I think for me, Walcott at 27 is reaching his peak now. Yeah. I think people have been really harsh with him before because he was so young and, you know, the World Cup, all this and that. And I think, you know, people get mature later than others. And I think at 27, there's still plenty of...
Can I put something different forward here? I have nothing against the guy. He makes an absurd amount of money. With his injuries and his inability to get in the lineup, I think he's contributed a lot less than his wages warrant, and some of that is not down to him. But I look at this, right? Arsenal play 4-2-3-1, some variation thereof. I'm assuming most of us feel that if you have four slots in your front four, two of those will automatically go to Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil simply because they're far, far better players than Theo Walcott, right?
Yeah.
Nobody's disputing that. So you have two slots left. And he's competing against Iwobi, who I actually think is really, really good. Aaron Ramsey's going to come back at some point.
Giroud as well.
Giroud, who I actually kind of like, but a lot of people seem to think is some big French joke. But, you know, but it gives you something different. They spent a lot of money on your pal, Lucas Perez, who's injured. No, he's not injured. No, he is injured. We don't really know. We don't know who this guy is. And we have Oxlade-Chamberlain. It's just a lot of competition. And to me, Wenger's actions speak louder than his words. If you really believed in this dude, he wouldn't have a bazillion attacking midfielder types, stroke forwards, who can do what he does. Welbeck. Welbeck's going to be back. I'm not saying Welbeck is necessarily better than Theo Walcott, but Welbeck at his peak is not far off Walcott at his peak, is he?
No, I agree. Yeah. I agree with you.
Different players.
Are they really that different?
Yeah, I think so.
Can you explain this? Because one guy, as I see it, plays on the wing or up front. The other guy plays on the wing or up front.
I think Welbeck's best position down the middle.
Definitely.
And I don't think Theo
Walcott. You think Walcott is a winger?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Cass was just talking nonsense. We're talking about a scoring record.
Stop deflecting the blame.
Yeah.
I'm telling you now, Welbeck is down the middle. Right.
I think
we've spoken
enough about Walcott for the rest of the season. The Xhaka red card, I'm curious about, because there were all these people saying, well, it should be a yellow. He's not violent, but it's just so freaking unsporting. He's just so stupid, too.
Don't tell me you've never seen one of those before.
No, I have.
Have you seen any red cards for that before?
I think they should always give a red card for that.
Come on, Gab. On the halfway line.
I'm not saying that's what the rules say. But I think they should fix the rules so that if you do stuff like this, you're off the pitch. It's got nothing to do with football.
Yeah, it's cynical. It was very cynical. But as an Italian, you would know because it's something
very
common
like
in your country.
I know. And we don't do it anymore. Except for Chiellini.
Yeah.
You invented it.
It's hard. You can't argue that it's not a red card. I'm sorry. You know, you might want to change the rule, but the rule that is now, it's just not a red card. It's a huge mistake.
In the grand scheme of things, Arsenal still won. You're laughing.
I'm laughing at you because I'm just thinking of, wonder what Gab Marcotti is like at home. He's missive. Serves him up on poached egg on toast with beans on toast. And
I don't
if the poached egg
beans.
Is on the left
I'm
side
not,
of the
I'm
toast.
Not totally
no, that poached egg should be on the right side of the toast.
You don't see the thumbprint on his forehead.
He mourns all the time.
Totally different.
I do most of the cooking at home, and I do not eat baked beans.
You're not saying.
I'm not English.
Well, do you have to be English to eat baked beans?
Maybe Irish people do. You, actually,
no. Don't even ask me. Don't even ask me about beans on toast or all that.
Is it a lot of pizza?
Your kids are half Welsh, right?
Yeah.
Do they eat baked beans?
They like baked beans.
Yeah.
I even take some to France for them.
Really?
When we're going on holidays.
Anyway, you've got a couple of has-beens in here.
You impressed by Bob Bradley?
After one game, I was surprised that Swansea actually were very adventurous. I know they were chasing a game, but I thought they were quite brave in a way and just kept going. And it could have ended up nicking something because first half they were totally outplayed in every department. Gab, after one game.
But it's one game, but then again he's had, you know, a week of training with the guy with
way too early to make an assessment of how well he's done in that particular game.
And somebody said, "Oh, new managers always do this," and I don't think they always do it. Some people do it. He questioned the fitness of the players. It is true; it does happen a lot. Mm. Why do managers do this? And I came to the conclusion that they don't necessarily want to criticize the previous manager directly because that's a bit gauche, unless you're Mourinho. But this way, you can go and criticize the fitness coach. So you're kind of criticizing the previous regime, but not really.
No, it's a dig at the old manager. If you turn up and say these lads aren't fit enough, that's a dig at the manager.
Yeah, and there are some.
But it's not a direct
thing. You lot aren't fit enough, right? Yeah. You know, this is what we're doing.
I think there are some cases, though. There are new managers coming. And I think Everton was one of them we touched on earlier,
it's a totally different way of playing. Yeah. But I don't know. Does this kind of stuff work when, like, you know, new manager comes in and starts shouting at you, "You guys all need to work harder, blah, you're not fit enough." Or is it the kind of ploy that you might use with an 8-year-old?
Well, I've had it a couple of times in my career. I'm sure James had it a couple of times in his career. Managers walk through the door and question our ability physically. It does happen, but is it an easy way out?
Terror Tuesdays.
Right. Actually, while we're on this point, and just to close out the Swansea portion, who's the shoutiest manager you ever had?
Oh, God. Let me come back. Ask James.
Who's the shoutiest manager Cass ever had? No, I'm kidding. Related to your own career.
George Burley.
Uncle George, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I've got it. Laszlo Bolini in Nancy.
Really?
He went crazy on the sidelines.
Verbal. The Romanian hard man.
He was as well, by the way.
I saw Nathan Jones.
Cristiano Ronaldo's second father.
So,
as you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
He was the one at Sporting who gave his debut to Cristiano and Cristiano really loves him.
He said to me when I joined at 34, I joined Nancy, and he said to me, because he didn't do the contract negotiations, he said, "How long have you signed for?" And I said, "Well, 18 months, really nearly 2 years." And he went, "I'll get 4 years out of you." And I thought, really? Oh, yeah. And when I played for him and trained, I know why I got 4 years, because right. I'd never been so fit.
So one of the highlights in the game this week, Henry Winter traveling over to Barcelona to speak to Ivan Rakitic ahead of that huge Barca-Manchester City game, Pep's homecoming and everything. I'm delighted to say that Henry's joining me now. Henry, you describe Rakitic as kind of an unsung hero. And I have to say, like,
he's not. He's. I think he gets fairly well sung. I was slightly surprised by that headline. One of the reasons why I wanted to go and see him was because he's been one of the players of European football. Twice in, I think, the Champions League team of the year. And I think whenever Messi, Suarez and Neymar talk, or other players there, they always sing Rakitic's praises. So I wouldn't say he's a unsung here. I think he's fairly well sung. So it's just an opportunity just to go and see him and hear his take on why he's had such an impact at Barcelona.
Yeah, I suppose on the unsung part, when you're on a team with Messi and Neymar and Iniesta and a guy who's married to Shakira, inevitably the attention shifts elsewhere. I agree with you. I'm struck by the fact that, and you can talk about this, he has this incredible sort of two-way intensity in the sense that he provides quality and quantity, and especially when he plays alongside Iniesta, who's now of a certain age and who he described very poetically as a dancer. You kind of need that, don't you?
Well, you know, when he went there from Sevilla, he was in a very good place at Sevilla. But he said when he went there, obviously he had to step up a level. It was the only club in the world he said he would have gone to. And just talking to people around him at the club when I got on Thursday, they were just saying, he looks almost gaunt when you look at him. He's you know, when he went there, he was this, you know, had the blonde flowing hair. But you look at him now, and he's a real athlete. He's taller than I expected, but he's almost sort of slightly hollow-cheeked because, as he says, he's lost 4 kilos, which is a huge amount for a footballer. I know this interview somewhere else today was at Nolito saying that he's lost weight by not eating sort of cakes and not sort of drinking sort of fizzy drinks. But this is, you know, this is a player in Rakitic who's always looked after himself. You know, he's always cooked for himself. You know, he's got a nice Italian place near where he lives in Barcelona. He goes there and he gets all the ingredients and he cooks for himself. But he's always done that ever since leaving home at 19. So to lose then when you're fairly athletic, so then lose 4 kilograms. And he says, listen, I've got to do it because I'm running 10,000 metres a game plus to support these three great players up front and also in the F.
He seems, what struck me again was just the extreme unselfishness of the guy. You look back to sort of the culture of Barcelona and players who maybe haven't worked out, like Ibrahimovic, who comes at it from a totally different perspective, maybe derided some Barcelona players as sort of, you know, goody-goody choir boy types. He really seemed, I mean, there's a sincerity that comes through about the way he talks. That's one of the things that surprised me most. But what surprised you other than this weight loss thing?
When I tend to do interviews, I'm so interested in hearing them speak. I just tend to let the quotes roll. So it's less of me sort of depicting them, the individual, and more giving them a platform. But what really struck me, which I probably should have put in the piece, just little details around him. Like we were sitting in a part of the training ground. And we got up and we were just sort of chatting as I walked back to the car. And he went back and just rearranged the chairs in the sort of, you know, just tidying up so that someone else wouldn't have to do it. Just little details like that. But little things that he said, which gave an insight. He said when he met his, the waitress who then became his wife. And the
Raquel.
The famous story, which everyone knows. Just little things like that. He said, I wanted to put myself in her shoes. And so he then sort of has this sort of mini monologue of what she would have been thinking. This blonde Croatian doesn't speak Spanish, coming into my bar. Who does he think he is? Footballer, he'll be sort of, you know, gone in 4 months. See ya. I'm not going to go out with you. And I just thought that in a world where we depict footballers as very selfish, it's actually quite a sort of selfless thing to do.
Isn't that, Henry, the culture of Barcelona, the club and the relationship with their fans is a pretty special one in world football?
I think that's right. I think that's reflected, Cass, in the fact that they went and picked someone like him. Even though he was the main man at Sevilla, you know, their first foreign captain since Maradona. In fact, they've only had two in their history. You know, I think he's always been a selfless individual. He talked about the debt that he owes his father, a decent player in Bosnia and Herzegovina, and because of the political tensions there between the clubs and obviously in society itself, they moved to Switzerland. So he then had to sacrifice. He went and built up this workshop, and he then couldn't play the football and live the dream that he wanted to. So I think Rakitic is a very conscientious individual. And of course, that chimes with what Barcelona expect from their players.
I don't know. Obviously, when you go and you do interviews, there's always stuff that gets said that doesn't end up making it into the piece, although this is it's a fabulous spread on page 12 of the game. And the column alongside it is also very, very good because it's by me. But
column's brilliant, actually. I think you find people that I asked actually to be put next to your column because I know that it's like being on the programme after Coronation Street. You're going to get quite a lot of people hanging around them for that.
You're too kind, Henry. But no, but I wanted to ask, because one of the interesting things about Barcelona this year is that they've added a lot of players in terms of depth. So they probably have a deeper squad than they did last year. And you look at the development of Rafinha, who was outstanding at the weekend. Obviously, they signed Andre Gomes. Did he talk at all about, you know, obviously no footballer is going to say, oh, I'm scared of competition, but the fact that maybe he's actually, he might be playing a few less minutes this year, maybe, you know, hitting all the big games, but about how that interplay is going to work with Luis Enrique rotating more this year.
But that should be the way it is. Whatever walk of life you're in, you've got competition. I think if anyone's got a sinecure, they're not going to produce. He says he thrives on that pressure. I think he enjoyed coming off the pitch after the Granada game when it was 2 years ago. They won 6-0. He'd scored. Messi had scored twice. Neymar got a hat-trick. And the first question was, you didn't do very well today. So I think that's the sort of pressure that actually works in most working environments, but particularly at Barcelona. So I can never understand where we are, Gavin. You'll know better than me. But Barcelona seem to have these transfer embargoes and keep on buying players. So I don't quite know how that works. But OK, so if there's a pressure on him and they're good kids coming through, then excellent. I think he'll thrive on that challenge.
No, I just have a personal weak spot for Rafinha. I think he's a tremendous footballer. And, you know, maybe when Iniesta's ready to move on, we'll see him alongside Rakitic. Henry Winter, thanks so much. The Ivan Rakitic interview is in The Game on page 12, or you can get it online. A small news item struck me, and maybe you guys know a little bit more about this, but I want to talk youth development. We've gone back to this. We have a specialist here in SCOE. Manchester United have, apparently, there's 30 academy products in the Premier League. Liverpool have 12. Obviously, we're taping this on a Monday night. United play Liverpool this evening at Anfield, which is why it hasn't happened yet, so we won't be talking about the game. But I just thought there was an interesting way to look at it. Liverpool have introduced a policy now where they're going to cap wages at youth level. I don't understand this at all. About why this is a good idea, why you should introduce an official cap. I guess it's tilted so there's more reward in terms of appearances and whatever. Somebody want to explain the rationale?
Yeah, I'll explain it. They've been doing it for a while. They're not the only club to do it. Tottenham do it as well. Not quite sure that when they say cap, because they've got a couple of special players, Harry Wilson being one, who's, I think, 17, played for Wales. Yeah. He won't be capped. He'll be paying. Tottenham do it as well, and Tottenham have probably just lost their best player, Naya Kirby, because of that. So it's...
Almost suggests you're not really a fan.
Well, you look at it. The clubs have got the money and the players. So if you're a 17-year-old, there's still probably an 80% chance in 10 years' time you'll be out of the game. They're the statistics. That's a fact. So what are you going to say? Well, no, you can't have this money. Well, even though you'll be out of the game in 5 years' time and you'll have to go and get a job and probably we could set you up for life like some clubs do. So what are they trying to...
On that, and James is spot on, but also the fact is that most people find the loophole of if they want to play, they would still go and bend the rules slightly within their structure. Yeah, they'll do it. They do. They always move the goalposts.
Yeah, but if Liverpool offer the same amount of money for a player than another club, that player will stay.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. The money having a cap, to me, doesn't make any sense at all.
If you give, which is not the case, but let's say if a 17-year-old, and we've seen that in clubs and gyms, wants 50,000 a week or 40,000 a week at 17, after only playing for the reserve or the under-23, never for the first team, do you give him or not?
If he's worth it.
Yeah.
if he's not, you don't.
Because you know if he's worth it if he's never played for the first team. If 17.
Well, that's how Daniel Sturridge really left Man City. He'd fallen out with over wages. Man City offered him, I was led to believe, I was told at the time, 55 grand a week to stay at City. Chelsea offered him more. He left.
To which point do you go? That's the thing.
But the prime example is Paul Pogba at Manchester United. He was offered 20 grand a week, but he wanted more.
He's not a youth team player anymore. I mean, we're talking about specifically about the strategy of capping youth team wages, right? Because with Pogba, he was going to sign a professional contract. Well, he already had a professional contract. He was going to sign like a proper contract.
No, but these are proper contracts.
Yeah.
The youth team players will be on government contracts, whatever there used to be.
So what's the logic? I don't understand. Why would you want to do that? Can anybody argue about
why?
I know you're going to say you're French and you love regulation and everything.
No, it's not that.
More free market oriented.
No, it's just that I think, but Klopp does it for the first team as well. I don't think he's ready to spend 300,000 a week for certain players. Same with Wenger. I think they're the same with the youth teams. Klopp doesn't think it's right to pay a 17-year-old who's never played for the first team £50,000 a week. I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying.
But why have the policy as opposed to deal it on a case-by-case basis?
There's two clubs and I won't mention them, but you can understand.
Why won't you mention them?
Man City, Chelsea, that have blown the market out of
some 14-year-olds at City.
The team up north.
Fortunes already.
Have completely blown the market away, and they will sign anybody and anybody who's good, and they'll pay very, very large sums of money. So what do other clubs do? Do they think, well...
And James is spot on. When you say you have this kid, 80% chance of not being a player in 15 or 10 years down the road, and he's got no golden opportunity to secure it already, because a club like Chelsea or Man City are going, well, we will pay you $60,000 a week, and you haven't played a game. They'll take a chance. Chelsea are taking a gamble on the lad, but they're believing.
Right.
Or City. So, to me, it's just,
but
it
again,
will happen.
City and Chelsea, it's not like you're signing 100 players in every age group.
To a certain point, well, a lot of clubs now are stockpiling 7-8-year-olds, literally to stop everyone getting them in their system. And
yeah, but you're not paying the 7-8-year-olds. But what I'm saying is, once it comes time to, well, you're making. Are they getting paid?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, and the parents are getting paid.
8-year-olds.
Yeah,
in England,
that's one of the biggest problems I think the game's going to have to face is parents being paid for young.
Here's
kids.
What this is what I don't understand though. Am I right in thinking that until you turn 16, you can walk out on your club at any time, right? So there are no
compensation.
Contracts. Right, but what's compensation going to be for a 10-year-old? So why would I give, if I had 8-year-old Cascarino, why would I pay his parents to have him join my club when I know he could up sticks and walk away at any time? Isn't it better to hire some gangsters to threaten your family?
It's not as easy as that because you can, but you wouldn't do it at 8. So ideally, clubs are trying to get them into their
system.
Don't
they hold the registration for a certain amount of time?
Well, the compensation's set, but what the Premier League now, that they're trying to make it impossible for Cat 1 academies to buy off Cat 1 academies. So they've now come out and said they'd like the agents thing, which is ridiculous, from 16. So you can only sign with an agent when you're 16, and now trying to get it down to 14. So basically the agents can do all the tapping up work and the clubs stay out of trouble.
Wow.
But it won't sort it out. It will always be same. Like United were very close to lose Marcus Rashford when he was not playing. And other big clubs, especially one very, very close to Manchester United, clearly see the talent and would have offered him far more money than he was on a United.
So surely you're only getting paid what you're worth.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah,
if someone's going to take you,
Messi is worth 300,000 a week. Or
well,
whatever.
He is now, but he probably would have been.
But he was not on that at 17. The money that some, like James was saying, that some
I'm
are
sure,
on at 15 already.
I'm sure that Barcelona had made it pretty clear that he was going nowhere.
No, of course. But that's not the point. The point is, how can you tell what a 16-year-old is worth? It's impossible.
All right. Howard Webb has a book out, which is serialized in The Times. When I first heard about this guy, referee's book, how good is it going to be? No, never going to be as good as Graham Pohl's book, obviously. But it's funny because he's actually really, really open about a lot of things, about sort of, especially when he says it's not like this anymore. But if you go back and find this, he talks about how sort of the referees were divided into cliques. And there was sort of the Graham Pohl clique, which was sort of loosely like the soft Southerners. And then there was the other clique with, what's the guy's name?
Mark Halsley.
Halsey, Winter, people like that, who were like sort of the Northern clique.
Yep.
And at one point, like they nearly came to blows. And they sound like such a bunch of. At one point, they come to blows. And remember Uriah Rennie? Uriah Rennie, who's like, you know, who's a giant and a black belt in karate, I believe. And he goes in, he has to separate people. And Webb talks about sort of being like a young, wide eyed guy introduced into that world. It's actually, even if you don't like Howard Webb, it's actually pretty fascinating stuff. But there's also a great thing in there when he talks about the. There's a great picture here of the Nigel de Jong tackle on Xabi Alonso in the World Cup final. And you look at this and you say, like, how could you possibly
miss this?
How could you? But, you know, he's very honest about it. And he's also told that, curiously, at halftime in that game, and I find this actually kind of disturbing, and I'm not going to make a big deal out of this, but if somebody did, I think there'd be a story in Holland and I'd be annoyed about this. So his linesman... who's this Darren Can guy, at halftime in the final, and you recall the De Jong and Xabi Alonso tackle was early on. De Jong did not get sent off. He gets his phone, because I guess he's going to go and play Tetris or something, and he sees all these text messages, and all these people are saying that, oh, Howard, that tackle, a lot of people are saying that should have been a red. They didn't violate any rules. There was no restriction on it. It seems, I would hope there are restrictions now, that a referee can't, at halftime, start receiving texts from people around the world or watching video. because that would seriously impact the second half. But he goes on and he explains about this, how later, you know, the Dutch were then angry with him later in the game. They accused him of, you know, I think essentially makeup calls and whatnot. I don't know. It does provide an insight, I think. And you work with Howard on television. He's, given what his previous job was, he's actually a pretty pleasant guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And I think he brings a lot of inside knowledge of what can go through referees' mind during games, and especially those kind of games, World Cup finals, big Champions League match. I'm not sure I would want to be Barca, Man City is maybe a different game, but you know, the referee tonight for a Liverpool Manchester United game is a hell of a task, and I don't think people realise how hard it is to referee a Liverpool Manchester United game or any football game, full stop, whether that's a youth level or Sunday League or whatever. It's a tough job, and I think people it's very easy to criticise referees when it's a really difficult job.
What's also funny, this ties into that, is the perception of referees being fans. And he tells a great story. And it's ironic with him, too, because the big joke was that Howard Webb was a United fan. In fact,
Rotherham.
In real life, he's a Rotherham fan. But the joke was that...
Yeah.
So apparently he was involved in some sort of refereeing get-together where they all got on the sauce a little bit. And they all started singing "You'll Never Walk Alone." Not because secretly...
they're all Liverpool fans, yeah.
Yeah, they're all Liverpool fans. No, they're actually all Celtic fans. And he talks about Fergie having a go at him, trying to intimidate him, and basically, you know, telling him, "I seen the video of you singing that song," and everything. And Webb says he stands up to Fergie, and then Fergie says, "I'm just messing with you, just trying to get inside your head. I know you're really a Rotherham fan," which I thought was hilarious. Anyway, the books, well, I don't know if the rest of the book is any good, but the extracts, I think, make for a very good read. So go check it out. Time now for some quick hits. Chelsea's back three continues to yield results as they stomp all over Leicester, 3-0. Cass, has Antonio Conte found his magic formula with Azpilicueta as one of the centre halves?
Well, I think he'll be delighted that he's gone back to back with two clean sheets, because certainly in the early part of the season.
And Leicester and Hall are such attacking dynamos that...
Oh no, if you take the early part of the season where they did look at sixes and sevens defensively, certainly Ivanovic being out there, John Terry, which was a surprise to a lot of people that he didn't go straight into the mode, back into the side. I thought Chelsea were really good in lots of areas. David Luiz, always on the ball, you feel a little bit edgy.
Tottenham are held at West Bromwich Albion 1-1, and they need a late Dele Alli goal to snatch a point. Julian, did we get a little too carried away in praising them last week?
No, we didn't. Sometimes you've got more difficult games, especially away from home, where things are not just clicking and you're missing a few players. You'll be tired after, especially after the international break. They will be right up there.
West Brom had an international break too, right?
Yeah, but not as many players, you know, were absent on international duties than Spurs. So, no, I think we were right to praise them, and we should praise them because they're a wonderful team with a wonderful manager, and you know, they'll be right up there throughout the season.
There's a very good Paul Ince interview in The Game by Martin Ziegler. Ince suggests that there ought to be a cap on foreign managers in England, and because quotas work very well. And he says that he's one of the top five English managers. Scoey, let's pretend God appears to the Glazers, and he says, okay, you must appoint an English manager. Can you name five English coaches that you would rather have managing Manchester United, which is the club you support, ahead of Paul Ince?
Yeah, that's just why I'm getting the Football League up. So I'm just starting at the bottom. Who's a manager of Barnet now? We'll work our way up through the league.
Martin Allen,
yeah.
Mad Dog, we'll go
right the way through the league, and then we'll get to Paul Ince. He really thinks he's in the top five?
Can you name five English managers? Who are the top five English managers right now?
Eddie Howe.
Okay.
Alan Pardew, your mate.
Bruce.
No helping.
Gary Rowett, Birmingham, great job. Lee Johnson, up-and-coming manager.
Who's Lee Johnson?
Bristol City manager.
Championship. Okay.
Yep. That's four.
You take Lee Johnson over Paul Ince, okay? You haven't mentioned the current England manager or the one before him or the one before that.
Sam.
Okay, so you think there's many English managers who are better than Paul Ince?
There's a few out there.
If he sat down and had a bit more time than just 5 seconds to think about it, I'm sure he could come up with.
All right, enough Paul Ince. Bournemouth stomp all over Hull City 6-1 just a few days after they made Mike Phelan's job permanent. Hey, great move there, guys. Made a huge difference, didn't it? Cass, I'm still waiting for Bournemouth to fall apart because I don't understand how they can just keep plugging along and still be so good. But I just have to accept the fact that they're for real, and people like Daniels and Wilson and maybe even Junior Stanislas are much better than I thought they were.
Well, as you know, Gab, I did a piece before the game and they were separated by 1 point. Bournemouth won more than Hull at the weekend, but I thought there's a massive gulf in between the two clubs. If you look at the forward lines that Eddie Howe's got, you know, people like Wilson, Josh King, even likes of Gradle, Ibe. I mean, he's got a whole host of strikers that many clubs would love to have.
Josh King?
That's well, I think Hull wouldn't mind having a Josh King.
Yeah.
They probably wouldn't mind having a Phoebe. They're players that, you know, that I think are a decent players for the squad, and
they spent money on them, haven't they? But I don't think people overlook that.
They spent a lot of money on forwards. And also, I'd add that my one thing I've always bothered me about Eddie Howe is, can he put a team together that's better defensively? And I say that because I think that's the only box he doesn't tick. I think everything else he ticks.
He doesn't have a plan B, does he?
No, not defensively. His sides, they got beat up by Tottenham at home last year, Man City, quite a few others, Arsenal, all got a lot of goals against them. But in offensive and attacking football, brilliant.
Watford went away at Middlesbrough and are actually in the top half of the table. Julian, they're another team playing with a back three. Is this enough for us to talk about a trend making its return?
Yeah, I like the idea of a trend with the back three. We see it in France as well with Nice and Lyon, and obviously this weekend Watford, Manchester City and Chelsea playing with the back three. Mazzarri at Watford was probably the first one to do it, even before Conte and Pep, where we admitted that Pep probably won't do it the whole season. But it's interesting. And what's also very interesting is that Juventus, the master of all three at the back, started playing four at the back this weekend under Allegri. So, but interesting, and I think it's a system that is underestimated by a lot of managers, but it's actually a very, very good one.
Charlie Austin bags two as Southampton beat Burnley 3-1. Scoey, is Austin a viable week-in, week-out, 90-minute centre forward in the Premier League? And if he is, shouldn't he be getting some more love from Gareth Southgate?
I think it will come. I think if you look at him since he's been in the Southampton side, is it 7 goals in 6 games? His actually goal-scoring record throughout his career is
phenomenal.
Fantastic. It's a goal every other game, really. Whether he's gone, even QPR when they got relegated, I think he got 18, 19 Premier League goals in a poor QPR side. And I think if he continues, Southampton's the next step up. If he continues at Southampton and goes throughout the season, becomes, you know, gets 20, 25 goals, then, yeah, definitely, I think England is calling.
Gab, one for you. We're all fascinated here by this crazy Mauro Icardi story. Tell us more.
Well, this story begins in February of 2015 with Inter Milan playing away to Sassuolo. Inter are terrible, so the travelling Inter fans demand that the players come over to them after the game so that they can give them some encouragement, which is basically another word for abuse, but at least salute the visiting fans. As they do this, Icardi and Freddy Guarin get a ton of abuse. Icardi loses his head, starts shouting at them. Then Icardi, this is according to what Icardi wrote in his autobiography, and of course it stands to reason that you would write an autobiography at age 23 when you've been so successful and won everything in sight. According to his autobiography, Icardi takes off his trousers or his shorts and his kit, his full kit, stands in his underwear, and he hands the kit to an 8 or 10 year old boy. The Inter supporters go intervene. They rip the kit out of the little boy's hand, saying like, "No, don't take it from him, because he's a lazy so and so." And they throw it back onto the pitch. This is Icardi's version of events of what happened back then. There's no TV evidence of this, and that's why the ultras are really unhappy that he wrote this in his book. He also wrote afterwards that when he went back into the dressing room, he told all his teammates were proud of him for standing up to the ultras with this sort of fictional incident that only happened in his head. And he also said that, you know, he wasn't scared of them, and if they messed with him, he'd bring over 100 criminals from Argentina, and he would kill them all one by one. This is all in this guy's book, which has just been published, so you can imagine. Well, it's funny you should
Mario.
You're maybe not familiar with his background, but he's being advised by a woman named Wanda Nara, who happens to be his girlfriend. Maybe it's his wife, his mother. He has a couple kids with her. She was previously the wife of
Maxi Lopez,
of course. They had this whole weird thing going on because they played together at Sampdoria and Icardi was having a relationship with her, and she was separated from Maxi, but like he started tweeting all these pictures of like the two of them like in bed, a picture of him like assembling IKEA furniture with her in like his underwear and stuff, and total disrespect towards Maxi Lopez, as you can imagine. He's a very, very odd person. Inter thought, like, if we give him the captain's armband, he'll suddenly become responsible. Yeah, because that's how real life works. But anyway, he issued his groveling apology before the game this weekend. The fans are still furious. The club will probably fine him and discipline him. Had an absolute nightmare of a game. That's Frank de Boer's fault for starting him. Missed a couple sitters, missed a penalty, and Inter ended up losing 2-1. Right, that's all we've got time for today. Many, many thanks to my guests, James Scowcroft, Tony Cascarino, Julian Lawrence, and especially Henry Winter, who joined us on the phone. Remember, it's just £12 for a 12-week trial of The Times. You can just search The Times online. There's a nifty app. There's actually some good stuff to read, not just in football, not just in sport, dare I say. Please press that subscribe button or wherever you choose to download your podcast and leave a review on iTunes or if you happen to be listening on an Apple device like me. We'll be back next week. Till next time, bye-bye.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.